Welcome to the Ethos Podcast, where we chat about customer loyalty and the exciting technology that supports it. My name is Matias Marquez, and I'm the CEO of Ethos, a company that is on a mission to elevate engagement for brands and their customers. In this episode, I have the pleasure of chatting with James Connell. James has over 20 years of senior leadership experience in brand building. He has built business units that have achieved over $100 million in sales and has been recognized as a Canadian Marketer of the Year. During our chat, we discussed the importance of customer experience and how that ultimately drives impactful customer engagement and lasting loyalty. We also get into practical areas of focus for emerging consumer brands today. I hope you enjoy. Well, James, really excited to have you on. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. Great to be here.
Awesome. Well, I'm really excited just your experience, and we were chatting before. I think there's such a great confluence of just like pieces there that will just lead to really good conversation. So excited to get right into it. So why don't we start with just your story and who James is?
So the quick elevator pitch, I joined Roots Organization, which is a Canadian retail brand, back in 1997 as a stock person, and rose up through the retail ranks to be the first e-commerce associate. Back in 1999, and helped them grow their digital channels, as well as acquired responsibilities for marketing, e-commerce, customer experience, visual merchandising, and creative services. To the point when I left, I was the chief e-commerce and customer experience officer. So that really meant sort of creating a brand vision for everything that touched the customer except for product, really. And then after that, spent some time in Asia, sort of detoxing from corporate life for a while because I'd been there for 25 years, and grabbed a bike in Chiang Mai in Thailand and toured around six different countries over a span of 9 months, and did some volunteer work, learned more about the sourcing part of the business that I hadn't known a lot about. When it came to apparel manufacturing, helped a number of different businesses in the region start to recover from COVID, then came back to Canada and have been doing consulting ever since, both for companies here in Asia, as well as here in North America. And at the same time, started a startup that's based in Singapore. So we're trying to help small to medium-sized businesses in Southeast Asia connect consumers to climate-positive projects that will help them amplify their marketing messaging and build a bigger fandom for their individual brands.
Super exciting. And there's so much there, right? You know, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is just double-clicking on the Roots experience, because, you know, for folks who aren't in Canada, Roots is iconic, right? I mean, if you see someone wearing sweatpants or a hoodie, or, you know, chances are it's Roots. And there's also an affinity to the brand that Canadians have that just, I would categorize it as, like, just love. And I guess there's two questions, like, you know, what's the sense of responsibility that you feel when you're working at and controlling a brand like that compared to maybe a smaller brand, and just, does that lead to more opportunity, less opportunity, more risk taking, less risk taking? But just to double click on the Roots experience, because it is really interesting because it's such an iconic brand.
Yeah, sure. I mean, when you look at Roots, it's a company that represents Canada to a lot of different people around the world. So yes, there's around 120 stores in Canada. There's also about the same amount of stores in Taiwan. And so as a result of that, we're sort of the Canadian embassy, so to speak, in Taiwan. So I think, you know, being part of a branded apparel company, you have to earn the right for someone to want to wear your logo on their chest. And so as a result of that, it means you need to stand for something and stand for something that people believe in, and be authentic about how you represent that, and start to really understand what your consumers value about your brand and what they desire. And so it was, to me, a big responsibility in the fact that we had big shoes to fill, as well as the fact that it's a heritage brand. It's been around for 50 years. It's important to be relevant as well. So that meant that, yes, there was some risk-taking that happened, but it was also calculated risk-taking to make sure that we remained relevant in the market. At the same time, we avoided some topics and some initiatives just because we knew that it wasn't necessarily relevant. You know, our customers weren't on Second Life at the time, as opposed to some other brands, and as a result, we didn't go there, as an example.
Super interesting. You know, and I was, when I asked you the question, I was thinking that the obvious answer might be that it's harder, but I almost get the sense that it might actually be easier being established and knowing what you stand for. Because if you're a smaller brand, you're still trying to kind of find your footing. You could see how you just try lots of different things. But in some cases, is it easier when you've really established yourself and you have those positions as a brand?
I think as a heritage brand specifically, yes. You know, you have this depth of knowledge from the people that had been at the organization before you, as well as a treasure trove of collateral that's there available to you to use and mine. So you don't necessarily ever want to stray too far from what people feel about the brand, but at the same time, you want to make sure it's fresh, innovative, and up to date. So I think there's sort of like a nice sweet spot. But you're right, when you're creating a new brand from scratch, you have the ability to go any direction in any way. And it's, you know, obviously easy to find a sweet spot that is relevant today, but what happens tomorrow? So sort of trying to understand the fact that if you create values for your brand, you want them to be relevant for multiple years as opposed to in this moment right now.
And is that when you're consulting and you're advising? Because a lot of the brands we work with and talk to are growing and smaller and like developing. Are you, when you're consulting, are you telling them, hey, you know, maybe be a little bit more quiet initially and kind of find where you fit? Or are you saying, hey, right off the get-go, you need to really understand what your core principles are and really lean into those and build a brand strategy around that?
I think hopefully, you know, before you've launched your company and out into the marketplace, you've done a product market fit. So you know who your customers are, and you've got some defined personas that you're trying to market against. And so really it's starting to understand what those people believe in, making sure that, you know, your initial assessment is somewhat relevant, and then just going hard. So it may be a situation where you go really hard on a very small defined group of people to sort of build your core brand advocates. And then hopefully that sort of is the genesis to something that is grows larger and larger, and you can sort of, you know, organically grow from there. But I think initially you have to be loud in order to be heard. It's a crowded marketplace. There's a ton of different products and services that are available out there. And so you really have to connect with someone. Part of connecting with someone is you're probably going to upset someone else. And sometimes that's a good thing, you know, and oftentimes that actually, frankly, is because in order to develop the passion of someone to like truly love you as a brand or a product, and a lot of times there's someone that's going to have an opposing view, and you just have to figure out how you're going to mitigate that impact and how you're going to deal with it if it happens.
Yeah, and just be intentional, right? If you're
Absolutely.
thoughtful about your brand and intentional, is that a lot of it? I know I'm kind of oversimplifying it, but would you kind of like, I know because you have all this great experience and you've talked to so many smaller brands too. Would that, if you gave them like one quick kind of few sentences, would that kind of be it?
I think, you know, I try to tell people make bold choices, because you're making bold choices. That means that you've leaned in far enough that it has a focus, and a pinpoint that you can actually talk to, as opposed to if you're going in and sort of launching something sort of in a mediocre way or a broad brush, you don't necessarily have that fine focus that will allow you to accelerate your growth. It means that you're probably diffusing your message too far, and as a result of that, you're probably not going to be heard as clearly and as articulately as someone who, you know, has really somewhat of a defined view. Like, you know, you look at, you know, bad example, but it's we're in a U.S. election year. Donald Trump, we know what he stands for. It's very clear what he stands for, and as a result, he's been able to accelerate his mission and his vision about how he would conduct himself as a president, regardless of whether or not you believe in his politics or not.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, he's definitely not like you can't say he's not bold, right? So I think having bold choice
Absolutely.
helps kind of people understand, okay, I understand who you are, and I may be for, you know, for the brand or against the brand, but it's better to have the customer understand your positions and your brand than just to kind of be kind of washed out of the crowd, right?
Absolutely. I'd rather have someone remember me for something than not remember me at all as a brand. And so at the end of the day, you know, it sometimes it's great. The fact that someone has upset you because, or some you've upset someone, just due to the fact that they're going to remember you and probably talk about you with someone else, and you never know who they're going to talk to. A lot of times they may encounter people that have opposing views that they do, and as a result of that, you're starting to win, intrigue and interest in your company or your products.
Totally. And this, I think, dovetails well to the next thing I wanted to kind of talk to you about is around customer experience, right? Because I saw an interesting stat actually that 86% of buyers will spend more for a greater customer experience. And what was really interesting to me about that statistic was there was another statistic right after it, and it was talking about convenience and the like customers will pay more for a better customer experience than necessarily even convenience. And I thought, I've always thought just convenience is such a high thing people will pay for. So when you're thinking about customer experience, like just help us kind of understand, like, because every brand has the ability to provide a unique customer experience. And I think being bold and being bold with your choices helps kind of like really lean into the experience only you can provide. But just kind of maybe walk us through how you view brand customer experiences and how to amplify and kind of expand on that.
I think, a lot of companies really focus in on your branded experience at point of conversion, meaning point of sale. And a lot of companies sort of forget about the fact that you should have a branded experience that encounters every single touch point with a company. So, to drive an analogy, I used to work with my team and we would do events. And I would tell them that a sign of a good party is the fact that you have a memorable experience in the bathroom. Because if the bathroom is typically a room that everyone typically goes to, it's something that is standard. You know what you're going to expect typically, but at the same time, it's something that most companies forget about the experience. So if we could provide you a branded experience in the bathroom, I know that we've thought about everything else outside of the bathroom 100%. And as a result, we're going to over deliver on your experiences. It's like, how do we create something that is unique to your brand or your product when you least expect it? And those are going to be the moments that really stand out to a consumer and make you memorable.
I really like that because when you think of even when you think of any kind of brand related event where it's like, you think about brand experiences or you think about brand, the convenience you're offering the customer, naturally, and I don't know why this is the case, but our brains just go to checkout. It's like, you just like zoom in to the point where you're just purchasing the thing. But you're right, like the experience is way beyond that. And if you pull it to the extreme, it's like it could even, be how you feel at the bathroom, right? And capturing all those different areas, like what would be the top at the top? Obviously, the experience at checkout and shopping, but what would be the most impactful brand experience kind of opportunities? I mean,
I think
thinking
for
about
me,
the bathroom.
yeah, I think for me, first impressions are super important, especially if you're a brand that has high consideration. I was recently looking with a friend at buying a car, and you're not going to buy the car the first time you actually go and do some research. You're going to do multiple, conversations, visits, website visits. But the first conversation that we had with someone when we went to the dealership was someone who was super aggressive, and really focused on making that sale. And so as a result, we're not going to go back to that brand, and he ended up buying something else. So, I think every situation or every customer journey, is different depending on the rate of consideration, the price point, the consumer need at that moment, and understanding the fact that your customer journey is going to have different points of quote unquote conversion that may not be a purchase. It may be, signing up for an email. It could be joining TikTok or following a brand on TikTok or all these different things that happen along the way that start to engage a consumer on a longer journey or a path that starts to create a fan or a loyal consumer as opposed to just a consumer. Because just a consumer, you can get someone to buy something just by reducing your price typically if there's need. But what you want to do is elevate the perceived value of your product or service to a point where price is not a consideration. It's the fact that you have the ability to provide beta service because, I can have my car in this certain circumstance really easily serviced. They'll come to my home and pick it up. They'll give me a drive to work. They'll give me updates on my phone through text message or an app. Like, there's all these different things that allow me to forget about the fact that I'm probably going to spend, X number of thousands of dollars in a car, as well as service and maintenance going on forward. But it's going to be something that I don't necessarily focus on as much because I'm so overwhelmed by the fact that they, one, they care about me, two, they're providing information that's transparent, and three, they actually, are catering to my needs.
Totally. There's so much there, right? So you think when, for a company like Roots, I think of, the first interaction probably when I'm walking into the store and maybe like the first display I see. And when I think of a younger developing brand, I'm thinking probably more like the e-commerce experience. When you're consulting these smaller brands, like what would be your the key points to really like to make sure that first impression's great, to make sure that you're not that salesperson who's kind of annoying them, and to elevate away from just the price point. What would be the key areas to kind of like, spend more time on?
I think for me, when I look at a website, especially right now on Shopify, there's a desire to sort of pull up a number of different pop-ups to get me to sign up to email, to engage in the latest sale, to figure out the cookie situation. As a result, you're putting up all these barriers of engagement. It's like, I don't know anything about your company. I've never visited your company, so why am I going to give you my email? Why don't you wait till I've actually, done some research, figured out a bit more about your brand or your product, and then I'm probably going to be more likely to actually sign up for your email, but not to the point where I'm landing for the first time. I have to create a situation where, I'm reducing that window, I'm accepting cookies, and I might be dealing with a sale. Like, to me, that sort of thing is just, increases your bounce rate. So figuring out the fact that, I sort of have an analogy often of times to start to sort of simplify this of when you invite someone into your home, what's the first thing you do? You say hello, you greet them, you welcome them into your home, and then you might have conversation about what you're going to eat or all these other things, but you're certainly not going to ask them for something the moment they step at your door.
Well, and if you use that analogy, and you even think of like even just walking into a retail store too, especially at a home too, you wouldn't like think of how annoying those pop-ups are, right? You would never like, hey, James, hey, James, hey, James, hey, cool that we have like this cookie consent. Are you good with that? Hey, by the way, we have the sale. It's like I literally took a half step in, right? So yeah, I think that's a really good way of looking at it because especially if you're a brand that is growing and developing and new. The first time someone lands on your website, that's going to be the first interaction likely they've ever had with you. And if they're having to clear cookies and clear stuff, clear stuff, clear stuff, clear stuff, it doesn't tend to, it doesn't lean towards a great customer experience. That's an interesting,
Exactly.
yeah.
Like, I think when I look at that, it's circumstance. I think it's, one, important that your website loads properly. It looks professional. You have all the essentials to build trust, like when it comes down to privacy policies, physical address, the ability to contact someone if something goes wrong, potentially chat, like all these other things that actually would get me to get to know you a little bit better, as opposed to bombarding me with discounts and alerts. Like, it's sort of like, how do I start to understand and get to know you a little bit better, and then we'll go down the transactional path, as opposed to being in a situation where you put your transaction first, and then you get to know someone.
Yeah, it's an interesting. It sounds so obvious when you kind of talk of it that way, but if you loaded up 99, 100 e-com stores right now, 99 would be exactly that, right? So, yeah, it's super interesting. So I mean, and that's on the first sale, right? And I think around building loyalty and getting brand top of mind, you have to get beyond the first sale, but you have to get, to two, three. I think I saw a definition of loyalty where it's you don't really build it until the fourth or fifth transaction. So what would you say to these brands who, okay, let's say that they make the purchasing, the initial interaction more, they make the initial interaction more welcoming and more friendly, and they earn the first purchase, what would you say to them around gaining the second, third, and fourth one? Is it because I mean, similarly to the cookies and the sales, it feels very similar in the sense that it's like discount, 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 when that may not be the right strategy. Do you get my question?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it really comes down to your product. So, there's a situation like, a footwear company, for example. You can tell someone about how to maintain their product, how to clean the product, the fact that you might provide after service, or free shoelaces. Like, there's all these different things that could be incentives as opposed to, save 10% on your next purchase. For a drink infusion brand I'm working with, it's you make your first purchase, which most likely is going to be something that's a gift for someone else. Then we start to talk about recipes that you can bring with you when you drop off the gift. There's different initiatives that you can do when it comes down to holidays or I guess use cases, like whether or not you're at the pool or a dinner party. Different alcoholic versus non-alcoholic use cases. So that sort of thing, like provide information about what the person has bought, so you're reducing buyer remorse, and then start to introduce the fact that there might be another item that the person might want to purchase. Like, for example, early days about with tracking, it was all about I went and looked at a pair of shoes, and that pair of shoes followed me forever, whether I bought them or not. I'm still seeing that. For a lot of retailers, like I just bought something online, and that same item has now been emailed to me through cart abandonment. It's been advertised to me on social media, and it's the first thing that's recommended to me. Meanwhile, I bought it 2 weeks ago. So it's like, give me the opportunity to see what the adjacent product is that goes with that, and take me out of the pool using your data mining or an ideal situation, a loyalty program. So you start to convert me down a path as opposed to recognizing the fact that I bought something and I'm going to want to buy it again. Typically, if you buy something, unless it's food that you're immediately consuming, you don't necessarily need to buy it immediately again.
Yeah. It's almost like, I really like the way you said about like inviting someone to your home, right? Because it changes the whole way you'd look at it. I think that rather than, treating someone like they walked into a car dealership, treat them like they've come into your home. And then similarly, when, the way you would just treat them generally, like treat them more like a friend, right? Because if a friend brought a product that you recommended, you wouldn't follow up right away with, "Hey, buy another one." You would say, "Hey, James, you know those shoes I told you to buy? You know you can do this with them, and by the way, they're great when it's raining." So I really like the way you're kind of framing it because it makes me think that it's more about just treating people, it's more human, more treating them like a friend. And I think the brand connection and the loyalty component kind of falls in easily after that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense. I mean, I think, from a company perspective, often we look at customers as transactions as opposed to stories. So, I'm a person, you're a person. We bring different experiences to the point of purchase when we're actually going to buy something. We have different motivations about what we're going to buy something. And we have different ideas about how we're going to use that product or service and then what we're going to buy next. And so if we can start to figure out the fact that there is going to be a path that doesn't start and end at buying a product, it's going to continue well past, hopefully, to be a loyal customer. And what are the sort of product adjacencies or use cases or additional opportunities that we have to either converse with that person or engage with that person to make sure that I'm the first brand that they think of, as opposed to a competitive brand and only focusing on the fact that I might have a sale, 25% off sale on Black Friday. Like the idea of having everyone come back once a year on Black Friday or Boxing Day or one of these sales, that's not a healthy brand and that's not a healthy business. The idea of having someone who comes back on a frequent basis because they love your brand, love your product, know how to use it, and you've catered to their needs is something that's, frankly, a much more healthy use case and business case, long term for any sort of company.
Yeah, totally. And this is why we're so excited about loyalty programs, because I think in a world where you want to invite people, you want people to opt in, right? I think that if you can earn that type of relationship with a customer, I think it's great to be able to say, hey, come join our club or come join our loyalty program, and you'll get, you know, way more than just discounts and way more than just sales. And I think the sales and the discounts play a role for sure, right? I mean, if you're one of their best customers, if you're one of the best customers of a brand and a sale is happening, well, you should know first about it for sure, right? But there's so many other things. And that's our big thing around kind of like helping these brands create loyalty programs. It's such an opportunity to just, you know, treat them like a friend initially and then treat them like a friend going forward. And if you keep, and ultimately what will happen is you'll stay top of mind. So you're not selling anymore. You're just, you're just connected to that customer. What would you say to that, James? I mean, like we obviously have a bias towards liking loyalty programs and that type of thing, but would you poke at that or would you agree with it? What would your thoughts be?
I agree with that. I mean, I look at a lot of loyalty programs and, you know, I'm like the average Canadian. I've joined a million. Whether or not I engage or not, most likely I don't engage with most that I've joined, just because of the fact that it's been so focused on the fact that if I joined, I got X, and that was a short-term benefit, and they didn't meet my needs long-term, and they didn't continue to engage me long-term. And so, you know, starting to understand, is there something that is more useful past buying something? So, you know, perfect example, I bought a pair of shoes when I was in Asia. And by joining the loyalty program, there was free repairs. There was the opportunity to get free laces. When they emailed me, I think it was like 3 months in, they, you know, suspected that I might need new laces or need something repaired. So as a result, they communicated with me about that. There was a point where they communicated to me about where the shoes were made, what was behind them, what was the environmental impact. And then a year later, they emailed me again and said, you know, we know you've had this product for a year. You may be looking for an upgrade. And also, you know, from an end of life perspective, this is an opportunity to reduce your environmental impact, by going to X place where you'll get a discount, to recycle. And this is what's going to happen. They're going to be ground up and turned into a running track, as an example. So, you know, there's different things that I think are super important that help define a brand, and define a customer experience that we just don't think about at top of mind often because we're so judged on the immediate drive to dollars. And sometimes the drive to dollars isn't necessarily a quick, you know, pulling out someone's credit card or their wallet. It's actually creating mind share and making sure that you're the top of mind company every time that person is shopping in that category or service.
I mean, the example you shared is great for that, right? I mean, all those benefits that they were offering you seemed thoughtful, timely, and appropriate around building a relationship with you. And, you know, come the next time you purchase a pair of shoes, you're not just comparing the dollars, right? You're going, hey, like, I like this brand. I'm a customer of this brand. You know, similarly for me, like, I'm a runner and, you know, I buy running shoes, I don't know, like every 6 months or so because they wear out. And I end up just looking at who has like the running shoes I typically wear and at what price I buy them. But I have all these other challenges and all these other opportunities for when I run. It's like I don't have the best posture. It wears too much on one side. Like if a brand helped me understand how to run better, helped me understand these types of things, I wouldn't then go and shop on price. I would say, well, no, this is the brand I use to buy my running shoes. So I just think there's such an opportunity there to build a long-term relationship. But I do think you're right. I think you have to take a longer term view. You can't just be focused on the immediate sale and next sale because it'll keep you in the loop that we've been talking about.
Well, it's funny that you're talking about running because I'm also a runner too. And I think, you know, running shoes have become somewhat of a commodity, but they're really not. There are so many different aspects of a running shoe, whether or not you pronate, how long you run, what type of surface you run in, like all these different things that people don't think about often if you don't go to the right store. If you go to the right store, they're going to look at how you run, you know, the distance you're running. And there's going to be a conversation about how you know, really get to know that runner and know their objectives and know their challenges, both from a health perspective as well as a goal perspective. And to have a sort of a conversation about price oftentimes leads to health issues, literally. So it's, you know, it's a perfect example of the fact that a category and a lot of retailers now has come down to price when really it shouldn't be. And it should be the fact that you get to know someone similar to, the corner store back in the day, when they knew that you liked, I don't know, Brussels sprouts. And so they brought in Brussels sprouts on a Friday because they knew you'd have a family dinner on Fridays. Like all these different things that, from a scalability perspective, it's harder now to know the fact that your customers on an ongoing basis because of the transient nature of retail to a certain degree. But at the same time, technology allows us to scale profitably and elevate the customer experience on a more mass scale, especially using generative AI.
Yeah, technology is the solution here because, and this is why we're so optimistic about the future of customer loyalty and retail and everything else. Because I think we've got to the point where, products are widely accessible and there's tons of selection. And I think now where technology can play a big role is really kind of optimizing your experience. And optimizing your experience isn't some thing you have to think of what that looks like. It looks like coming, walking into a corner store, that they know your name. Right, or talking to a friend who also runs and suggests things. So I think there's such an exciting point ahead where the experiences and the relationships we have with brands are more, I want to say like way more valuable, but not even like dollar valuable, like more valuable in the sense that you appreciate them more and they're more beneficial to you. And I think that's what's ahead. And I think this had to come first. I think like the ability to sell things online easily, the ability to have wide selection had to come first. But I think this is the era ahead of us. And I'm just really excited as a customer too, because, there's tons of products that I buy incorrectly or I just don't have a right kind of, perspective on. And I think that that'll get kind of solved. Just to kind of touch it onto something else too, because, how brands communicate, I think, plays a big role too. What role do you think like social media plays into this? Because, as we're talking about this and I think about the opportunity for a better relationship, is social media noise in that relationship or is it a value add? And I just want to loop that in because I know that like for some reason in my head, I was just like great that we're going to have these great relationships, but is there this noisy kind of like thing getting in our way?
I think it really comes down to how a brand or a company uses social media. A lot of companies, I feel, use it as a broadcast device, as opposed to something that actually engages. So, there's only so much, when someone wants to engage, with beautiful product pictures. At the end of the day, I know what your product looks like. Maybe it's a new product. I want to see that first product, but I don't necessarily need to see it multiple times. But if you engage me about something that's of use, and something that resonates with me and provides me something that I can't get somewhere else, I'm going to follow you on social. So, I was talking to a company recently and they have great pictures of all these different kid models because it was a kid clothing company. And, everything looks fantastic. But at the same time, I want to see pictures of my friends' kids. I don't want to see pictures of a model. Everything looks so curated. As a result of that, there wasn't a lot of engagement in a lot of the posts. But when they started to do things like, how to make iced coffee, and it was a bit of a joke of, once you have kids, you have iced coffee because you forget about your coffee. The engagement was completely through the roof, comparatively speaking, to the other posts. And so it's like, if you're a kids brand, let's lean into that. How do be a better parent? How do we, utilize our products to enhance the parenting experience? What are some things that, from a gifting perspective, you might want to consider when giving a gift of that brand to someone? Like, there's all these things that are not necessarily that deep. But it helps me engage and provides me a reason to watch. Like I look at Netflix wouldn't be that interesting if it was just a series of pictures or posts that weren't that entertaining. It was just the same picture over and over again of different angles. But the fact that you're telling me a story about something that I'm interested in, you're hopefully, in some circumstances helping me learn something new or different or at least entertaining me, like. That's what social media is great at is, you look at the success of TikTok and the engagement that TikTok has, It is so engaging because you're entertaining people. And the algorithm knows what you're looking at, and as a result, can really customize your feed to some to topics and products that you think that you will it thinks you would like. And as a result of that, the scroll factor or the doom scroll factor, sometimes it can be easily 45 minutes to an hour, as opposed to some other social media platforms, challenged me to hold my attention past 15 minutes at best.
This is so interesting because it ties into what we were just talking about. Because when we were on the previous topic, I was thinking like, oh wow, there's going to be this great Renaissance period of more intimate relationships with brands and customers. Then I was like, oh no, there's like social media who can be this noisy kind of cousin who gets in the way. But I like the way you describe it because it can totally be accretive. Like it can totally be additional and just another place to kind of connect. But to your point, it needs to be authentic and like it can't just be pretty photos, right? It needs to be something that resonates with your customers. And
Yeah, but well, going back to your shoe shopping conversation that we randomly stumbled on, if there was a situation where you were able to scan a QR code and see different comments from other customers on social media or otherwise that are part of the community that have bought that shoe, then they might be able to give you insight in order to help you buy the right shoe for yourself. So you're creating a bit of a peer-to-peer network as opposed to just relying on the sales associate to know exactly, what you might want to buy. I think the leveraging community is something that isn't necessarily done enough in retail, especially sports retail. And I would love to be in a situation where I can get, someone who I feel is a peer, their advice on what to buy, as opposed to relying on the person. The one person that I'm speaking to who may or may not have been at the training session, and is somewhat motivated to make a purchase to hit a sales goal. I want to know about the 15 other people that just ran a half marathon in that shoe and what their experience was and what type of runner they are instead.
Yeah, and if you can trust that it's a real person and a real customer, and that you put this
Absolutely.
talk into that, right? So, yeah, it is totally an untapped, effectively an untapped opportunity of like bringing in others and building that community, which we think there's a big opportunity there. It's kind of like back to your corner store example. It's like how what we're trying to replicate in the digital world is like walking down to the corner store, the person at the corner store remembering you and then recommending things that you actually want, and then someone else being there and saying, hey James, I have actually tried that too, and by the way, like it's great, or here's where it's great, as an example. And I think technology can kind of bring it home, and I think it will, right? I think that all of it will kind of come together. Are you as excited about kind of the future of retail and like where like customer and the relationships they have with brands is at least in my head going to?
I'm excited, but I'm also apprehensive at the same time. And I'm excited by the fact that if you have vision in your organization and real drive about what you are as a brand and how to articulate your brand to a customer and sort of create more of a ecosystem of content around your products, I'm super excited about brands. I just, at this point, haven't seen a lot of companies, especially in the West right now, be able to step up their game. And so when you look at the Chinese shopping apps that are coming in and they're essentially connecting manufacturers to customer, and it's all based on price, you don't necessarily know the quality of the product, and whether or not you should frankly even be using it or it's authentic, all these different things that don't have the checks and balances that we typically would have by going into a store. But those shopping apps are really connecting someone on a price point that is not competitive, when or really, viable from a business perspective, for a Western retailer. So I think understanding the fact that we need to relook at the business model, and look at how we're going to create something that is competitive to that space. And something that is going to be long-term viable. On the other hand, I see what Pinduoduo is doing for the agricultural industry in China, and connecting farmers directly with consumers in cities allows a lot of the middle people to be squeezed out, which, for them, obviously, it's not a great thing, but at the same time, it allows the rice farmer, the durian farmer, to actually get a bigger piece of the pie. And as a result of that, these rural communities across China are starting to be much more desirable to live in, and there isn't the drive to go into a city to take a factory or an office job. It means that, communities actually can grow, and farming is a viable long-term option, which I think is something that's super important. I don't think we necessarily value enough the people that make our food and how it's being grown. And as a result, you sort of get in these factory farming situations. But for another topic, another day. But looking at ways to shrink or shorten the lifespan of the delivery, sorry, the delivery span of a product to a customer allows you to reduce your inventory. It allows you to be more honed in on what the market demand is, and as a result of that, most likely there's going to be less wastage, and as a result, fewer excess products that are put in the waste stream.
Yeah, totally. And all these kind of changes, and like I share a little bit about your apprehension, but I think that ultimately what happens is you'll have on one side brands that do a really good job building brand, building community, building relationships. And on the other side, you'll have people who are really good at competing on price, right? Where they can, right? And I think, you'll have kind of that kind of like separation occur, but it may not be a bad thing, right? Because you, if you want to be a brand that, has is bold and can kind of really reach an audience, you'll be rewarded. And if you want to just compete on price, you'll be rewarded. So I think, I had a friend say to me, hey, the digital transformation era has kind of been upon us, but we're moving to more of a digital optimization period. And I think in many ways that is true. Yeah, I don't just it's interesting. And man, we didn't even really talk about AI, and AI just adds another whole like layer on top of all this. Just to kind of wrap it up though, James, because I could talk to you for hours on this stuff. What would be kind of the big kind of just top one, two, three things that you would have a developing, growing e-commerce brand just kind of like make sense of all this and just like lean into it? Because you can't do everything, right? So just lean into
Right.
a few things.
I think one, focus on optimizing your conversion rate on your website. So that's, making sure that everything works correctly. You have enough information and your SEO is on point. Product images are fantastic, that sort of thing. So I think, that's the baseline. Past that is really starting to understand how to build a community of people who follow you and buy you for, in a branded circumstance, not for price. Obviously there are retailers that compete on price, but I don't think that's necessarily what we're talking about today. Really, it's a situation where how do you elevate and create a community of people that want to engage with you, both short term and long term, and making sure that you're doing everything you can to cater to their needs, understand their needs, and start to anticipate their needs now as well as in the future to make sure that your business is long term viable. Because at the end of the day, it's much, you heard this said a million times, I'm sure. It's much more cost effective to maintain a relationship as opposed to acquire new customers on an ongoing basis. And so, making sure that you're addressing and creating a conversation that has a story that doesn't necessarily have an end, is something that I believe is key to the long-term viability of any small brand.
Awesome. Very, very wise words. And thank you for kind of synthesizing like that. Well, James, it's been absolute pleasure. And I love chatting with you, and I can talk to you about this stuff forever. So we'll definitely have to have you back, and we can talk more on TikTok and AI and all this other stuff that's kind of ahead. But thank you so much, James. Really, really appreciated it.
Thanks, and it was a great conversation. I really appreciate you asking me to do this.
Awesome.
Thanks for tuning into this episode. If you enjoyed, please make sure to give us a rating and follow us on whatever platform you listen from. Thanks again for listening. Take care.